to stitch a paid $500 for it, so let's make sure we got it.
Starting in 5 seconds. I didn't put that in. Because, is there a little doodad?
Yes, there.
Oh, okay.
It's not moving forward. Okay, so we'll just move it forward by hand. Yeah, let's make sure we have sound.
Oh, I think I'm doing it.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
I need to make sure
doing
we have
it now. I just need to be plugged and unplugged.
I'm not getting sound. I'm not getting sound. Yeah. The cord is here.
It might have plugged into the wrong one. It might be this one and not that one.
Which one goes in?
would be this one. It would definitely be that one. Did you try to run something?
Set this.
No. Did the input change?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I think I should introduce myself since I don't even recognize myself in that photo. It's a few years old. So my name is Lee Barker, and I'm president and professor of ministry at Meadville-Lombard Theological School. And welcome to our workshop titled Teaching Your Heart, Liturgical Pedagogy for Challenging Times. Meadville-Lombard is a Unitarian Universalist seminary. We're located in Chicago, and with well over 100 ministerial students, we are the seminary that by far educates the largest number of Unitarian Universalist ministers. Our students live all over the world, serving in congregations and social agencies as an integral part of their coursework. Ours is not an online program. It's a contextual learning program that emphasizes team teaching, service learning, cohort reflection, collaboration, and multicultural and anti-racist leadership, all grounded in sound academics. Our students, we like to say, are acting and serving their way into new ways of thinking and being. Our learning model has been lauded by our seminary peers from around the continent as being perfectly tuned to the needs of the 21st century. And if you'd like more information, please stop by the table at the rear of the room where you can not only pick up a brochure or two, but add your name to our mailing list. We'd like to keep you informed of all of the exciting developments at our school. You remember that I said that we are an institution that emphasizes collaborative leadership, and I'll tell you that when our accrediting body, the Association of Theological Schools, made its site visit not too long ago, they sat me down in my office and gave me some of their feedback about our program. They began with the words, "Lee, everyone says they are collaborative. You guys really are." And then they went on to extol the many virtues of the seminary. But I bring that up because today's presentation is that perfect representation of who we are and how we work at our school. Our faculty is creative and dynamic, working across disciplines to offer the best to our students and Unitarian Universalism, we feel that we have an obligation to work outside of any silos in order to model that for our students and bring about collaborative leadership to our entire, to all of our churches and to Unitarian Universalism. Today, two professors are presenting. They are the Reverend Dr. Nicole Kirk, who holds the Frank and Alice Schulman Chair in Unitarian Universalist History at Meadville Lombard, and Dr. Mark Hicks, who serves as the Angus MacLean Professor of Religious Education and the director of our school's FOS Collaborative. Let the collaboration begin.
Laughter is centering as well. Six people gathered in a living room of Lincoln and Carol Christensen in Mentor, Ohio, to discuss the idea of starting a Unitarian church. It was February 1956. Ohio was rapidly growing in the post-war boom. Chemical companies, manufacturing companies sprung up around Cleveland, attracting scientists, mathematicians, and chemists, among others. The small towns surrounding Cleveland grew with new schools, shopping centers, libraries, parks. They were built as quickly as possible. And there were churches, dozens upon dozens of churches. But those gathered in the Christensen living room did not want to be Presbyterians or Methodists or even the liberal disciples of Christ. They wanted to be Unitarian. And although there were other Unitarian churches in Cleveland, in the eastern villages of Mentor, Painesville, and Chardon, they were all more than 20 miles away from those churches in Cleveland. So the group of six plotted a course forward. They decided to put an advertisement in the local paper announcing a meeting to discern interest in liberal religion in Lake County and the desire to begin a Unitarian church. 20 people showed up at the meeting. By May of that year, they had applied and received fellowship status from the American Unitarian Association, and a few years later, the association would say that they were now moving towards a church. This happened when they received a minister at large, Reverend Grant Butler, who helped the fellowship grow. And it did. It did. History is a set of stories, like this one. And we tell these stories in order to better understand who we are, where we are going, where we are not. It is never, though, just a catalog of things that happen to have happened And this is what a lot of my students coming into my classroom sometimes think. They, oh, I have to take history, 1852, 1925. They get very nervous. Hosea, how do you spell that? Balu? Things like that. But in fact, history is so much more than names and dates. It's stories. And it's about relationships. It's about us, and it's not about us. History often focuses on the turning points, the pivots, the moment of change, and the events leading up to the change or the shift, and what happened afterwards. Some historians talk about it this way: the past is a foreign country, as well as being our past. We can go visit it, but it doesn't feel the same. And if you think about all those movies where there's time travel, they're quite usually comedies, that's what it's like. But sometimes we get confused and we think that it might be just the same as today. Historian Rowan Williams goes on to say about history that traditionalists sometimes miss the point of history because they don't expect to be surprised by the past. Progressives, that's us, miss the point because they don't expect to be interested or questioned by it. And I would add, we like to say how, well, we've moved on from there. We're better now. Religion inherently is about history, stories of the past, what happened, who was there, how that shapes us and informs us and leads us today. But history invites us into questioning and researching and learning a congregation's or community's history is to engage in the work of multiculturalism. Sometimes we think that multicultural work is only about working about the past or in the present in terms of racial and ethnic difference, but there's so much more cultural difference than just those two categories. And history can bring that out for us if we look hard enough. Even if you think the people you are reading about are a lot like you, they usually aren't. They're living in a different time and place and context with their own struggles. And so doing history, studying it, researching it, is a part of our training for a multicultural world to be better equipped and comfortable with the other that just happens to be in the past. Now, one of the great joys I have as a professor of Unitarian Universalist History and Religious History at Meadville Lombard is that every year I get to hear stories of congregations across this world because we are an international program. So students who are telling me of churches in Switzerland and Canada and North America and Mexico, hearing these histories. It's an assignment for the students, assignment of congregational history to present to the entire class. And every year, a remarkable thing happens. Common themes emerge, and there's an inevitable aha moment. When students recognize the current problems and struggles in their congregations frequently have a historical echo. So, and even though they're not the same as we are, there is this connection, especially when we get to the intimate level of our own communities and congregations. And we realize that fight over the wall hanging in the narthex goes back 40 years to a carpeting issue. And then we realize when we're in training as ministers, but also as lay members who are growing in your spiritual formation, you start to think and question, is it really about the wall hanging and the carpet? Now, the problems and controversies and the debates are not the same, but it's easy to assume the problems are, and yet there is this connection. Those places and those times and those problems and that echo, and we see those themes happen every year. Now, that story of the Christensens and that beginning of that fellowship in Ohio, it grew, it thrived, but there's also stories from its history when the congregation split over theology, personalities. And if you start thinking about all the other stories that I hear from my students over the years, you see these other connections with the stories. Times when there is a fight over theology. Some feeling that the minister didn't talk enough of their theological language. And then also that addendum to the story of how they were too much involved in the civil rights movement. And so is the theology complaints masking the nervousness around the justice work? Or is the justice work the complaint that's pointing to the theology? It's hard, hard work to uncover these things. Stories, stories, and stories, making all those connections. It's easy to assume the problems, yes, the problems are the same. And while they're not, they can absolutely teach us about the present and how to go forward and can be healing because sometimes it's too difficult to talk about this very moment. But if we can talk about the past, it's a way to reteach our hearts. The Jewish tradition in the Reform Yom Kippur service, they have this beautiful line that says that we are heirs of the past, makers of the future. Heirs of the past, makers of the future. And we are heirs to all of it. The brokenness, the mistakes, the missteps, the failures, the places where injustice prevailed. And yet, there is also those moments of movement and change and newness and love. Our inheritance is so large, and there's so much that history can teach us about what we face and struggle with in the present. And every year, that's what happens in the classroom. My students getting up across the world, sharing these congregational histories, and themes begin to emerge. Some years, and it's all by happenstance, some years there seems to be a whole bunch of congregations that had a great deal of difficulty earlier in their time, and some that it was around being humanist and theist debates in the 1970s. Sometimes, well, I hate to tell you this, but there's one year when it seemed that everyone had a congregational history where a church burned down from bad wiring or an abandoned candle. These kinds of themes come out. But more importantly, the human themes of what it means to be Unitarians and Universalist and Unitarian Universalist and the struggles that our forebears have come across, how they've handled it, sometimes well and not so well. The way we too often tell our history is as of a lone individual, but our history is about all of us in this room and all the people in the congregations. Our histories are about relationship. Mark Morrison Reed, history professor also at Meadville Lombard, at the Selma celebration, challenged all of us with a question. He said, when you are seeking to grow, when you want to make change, when you want to reach out, when you want to increase your diversity and work for justice, you ask yourself the question, who are you in relationship with? Who are you in relationship with? And your history, our history, your community's history is a part of that question. Who are you in relationship? Who have you fallen out of relationship? Where are the places you have struggled the most?
These stories that we tell about differences of opinion and personality and style and theology are not new, but they serve as opportunities to make meaning of our lives in community. Particularly old, old stories that represent places of stuckness. As a historian and as a religious educator, we invite you to consider that places of stuckness are not just in our past, but are locations for deep spiritual work today. The work of history, as Nicole just said, is to remember our past. The work of education is to bring it to the front of our brains, to connect, to make meaning of the experiences that shape our lives. Now, these stories that we tell Provide us with an opportunity right now to think about how to practice ourselves into new ways of being. We're going to invite you to be both a participant in the exercises we are about to model, and we're going to ask you to be an observer of your own learning, your own processes. These practices of liturgical pedagogy can be used in a variety of different settings, in worship, workshops, community gatherings, classrooms, and so forth. We're going to invite you to imagine, to play with ideas, to understand your own story more deeply, to wrestle with your own places of stuckness, of resistance, myopia, and consider what might be possible. So yes, this is a workshop. We're going to ask you to do some active work, connecting your own personal stories to a problem that's alive for you this very moment. For those of you that are on the aisles, you will see cards on the floor around you. We're going to ask you to help us to be distributors of those cards, and so if you would pass them along to those around. If we don't have enough cards, we didn't really know how many people to expect. If you have a sheet of paper in your notebook or a journal, anything along that line, that will be fine. Alex is actually here with some cards in her hand, so if there are dry spots that are cardless, we can help you out. Just raise your hand. Okay, and you also probably noticed our yogurt cup collection of crayons. If you would also distribute those among your peers, or if you have a pen or pencil, it's just something to write with. So we thought it might be kind of a fun way to play with ideas. You just need something to write with, and they're crayons if you'd like to use those. All right, so as we're distributing these materials, I'd like to ask you to reflect on an area of tension. Often when we think about things that happen in times of conflict and challenge, we're very quick to extend our fingers and our attitudes and our dispositions toward what someone else has done, right? What we're going to do is to ask you to think about your role in that tension. So you'll see on the screen a sort of diagramming way, a graphic way of organizing your thinking. So the question is this: remember a time when you othered someone in your community, when you named or stereotyped someone who had a different opinion or point of view. Right? So in this particular example that you see in front of you, this is a moment when, I'll just use myself, when I thought I knew the best way to solve this problem and those other people, crazy. Where are you coming from? Who is your mother? Who raised you to be that way? Right? When you othered someone else, I want you to think of that experience, and then we're going to give you a little bit of time to organize your thoughts. What did you do? In this particular setting, I organized this meeting where I didn't give people who had that opinion time to talk. It's a discussion that needed an hour. You have 30 seconds. Right? I didn't allow time for checking in, for people to be human, for that human story to come into the room that wasn't there. When I thought about it, maybe I thought that it was something about me feeling like I would be a failure if I didn't get my point of view out there, that they would run me over, right? Think about that story for you. Use your paper, your pen, and organize your thoughts a little bit so that you can get clear on what was happening. I'm going to give you about 3 minutes to do that. Certainly.
Can't hear you. It's just very quick.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. So remember a time when you still can't hear. Is that better? Somehow or another, I can hear myself here. I wonder. Okay. Remember a time when you othered someone in your community. When you othered someone in your community. When you stereotyped them. When you didn't open up space for their point of view. When you othered another person. So you have a couple of minutes to write those things down. And it should be a story that you're comfortable sharing with another person. How did you behave? What were the issues? What were your feelings or emotions that captured you? Okay, so if you would find a conversation partner, maybe the person sitting next to you, if you don't know them, introduce yourself, say hello to that person. I want you to tell your story. Each of you has about 4 minutes or so to tell that story to your partner.
You have about another minute or so to tell your stories. The second person should be talking. Okay. Thank you very much for doing that deep work. One of the practices for learning, for a type of learning that is transformative, that moves you to a different place where you begin to recognize that the way that you were before wasn't necessarily helpful, it wasn't useful, it's not the way that you want it to be, is to think about how to let that go. What we're going to do next involves a process of thinking about that and letting it roll over and outward. To read these words with me, please. Having been the other, may our hearts exclude no one. May our knowledge of redemption bring us back to love. We are going to sing this in the spirit of Tazeh. So it will repeat several times, and the idea is to let this become meditative for you. So I'm going to invite you to think about your story, think about the places where you are not necessarily proud of what you did, how you were thinking, and your behavior. Talk to yourself.
Redemption bring us back to love. Having been the other, may our hearts exclude no one. May our knowledge of redemption bring us back to love. Having been the other, may our hearts include no one. May our knowledge of redemption bring us back to love. having been the other. May our hearts exclude no one. May our knowledge of redemption bring us back love.
Blessed be.
If the point is relationship, perhaps the stumbling blocks we encounter in our justice work is related to our struggles with the relationships in our religious communities. When we're having trouble with relationships with others in our justice work, perhaps it's because of the struggles with the relationships in our congregations. Have you ever thought about the cultural differences that influence the behavior of your fellow church members, of you? This includes theological difference, which sometimes is used as a shield or a foil to describe cultural clashes that are often about much, much more, and they are still about the theological difference. It is not an either or, it is a both and. Why does this matter? If we can't do the relational work in our congregations, then how do we expect to do it in our justice work? If relationships are so important, why aren't we paying attention to how we are in relationship with one another when problems arise? Friction exists when clashes happen, and they have, they will, they do, because that is the part of being a people in community. Ignoring it is what we often call conflict avoidant. We do more damage than the misunderstanding, the upset, the anger of the moment. This is a part of our stuckness, the places where we get held up. And in many congregational settings, we get stuck over and over in the same places, seemingly replaying our history over and over. Or in the places where we don't even know our history, or we exclusively focus on the golden age. We get stuck in this perceived mythological place of goodness that happened 50, 75 years before. And so what we've been talking about today is spiritual transformation that comes through intercultural competency. Intercultural competency means, among other things, according to Luis Rivera Rodriguez, the diversity, exchanges, and interrelations of cultural subjects and traditions. In all the talk of multiculturalism and a multiracial world, we forget another piece to this conversation. We forget about theology, the theological conversation, the theological identity that's a part of the intercultural exchanges in our lives. And this is even more so in a Unitarian Universalist context. Again, Rivera Rodriguez says that theology is an intercultural enterprise because it develops its understanding of ethics, salvation, the good, in a historical, religious, cultural, and bodily context. And so the practice of intercultural dialogue, the habit of being in practice of that dialogue, is one that takes place through the mutual witnessing and contrasting of dialogue and reflection. It's hearing one another, not trying to make the other come to your point of view, not trying to push them out because you don't want to hear it, but to genuinely try to understand where they are coming from. Intercultural dialogue happens when people from different cultural backgrounds
and theologies and identities meet and coexist, share with one another from the respective cultural horizon and experience, what they understand and live as truth. So what does this all mean? It's learning how to see the benefits and the theological and spiritual values that show up in ways that we don't like. It's learning how to put yourself in others' positions and see things from their point of view. Let's tie that back to liturgical pedagogy. Our work is to teach our heart. It's to learn skills and sustain ourselves and keep asking to love more broadly. It's the work that must be done in our communities, more than just in our own lives, but in our entire communities, bringing our voices, our motivations, and our vulnerability, teaching our hearts to love, seeing those places of stuckness in the past, seeing them in the current place we are now. How do we begin? We begin by naming the tender places of growth and possibility.
I'd like to invite you on that sheet of paper that you have. To think about a hope or a prayer that you have for yourself around that place of stuckness. Recognizing how you have fallen short of your best intentions, write a hope, prayer, or affirmation that you have for yourself to go forward around that place of stuckness. What does it look like for you? How would you talk to yourself? One of the ways that we learn is to invite other people to bear witness to how we want to grow. I'm going to start some music, and I'm going to invite anyone who would like to share their hope or their prayer or their an affirmation they have for themselves to come to the center microphone and share, if you would like to share your statement. Under 10 words, please. Just want to think it as a natural process here. Yes.
I center and smile on, love the other and myself.
I am Warren Bean from Boise, Idaho. Do not overschedule yourself.
Ross Quinn from Victorville, California. to me. Love is the equalizer. You needn't be perfect.
Peter Candace, UU Congregation of the Low Country, be calm, be gentle, be humble.
Carrie Carter, UU Church of Fargo, Moorhead, Fargo, North Dakota. Other ideas and mine are valid. Respect them all.
Jim Idell, Escondido, California. Value relationships more than results, people more than progress.
Shante Daniels, UUCA, Annapolis, Maryland. To be proud of who I am, where I come from, my journey makes me, makes the best human I can be.
Rhonda Brown, each breath I take, each breath is filled with love.
Rebecca Keller-Scholl, First Parish, Needham, Massachusetts. Seeing the spark of the divine in you fans the flame of fire and commitment and compassion in me.
It is good to have the conversation.
I'm a little tall. I'm Ronald from Medford, Oregon, and my inspirational words, this is as good as it gets, is these people aren't all bad.
Jean Helms, move beyond my need for acceptance and into authentic being.
Lorraine McNeil from Dallas, Texas. To recognize that anger comes out of pain and to be present to that pain.
Julie from Concord, New Hampshire. Allow room for everyone's needs, not only my own. Mutual understanding means listening.
Pause, breathe, imagine myself in your shoes.
Yvonne Keller, Plymouth, Mass. I will attend to both the anxiety and the positive intention of the other.
Begin again.
I'm open to the lessons within and beyond my blindness.
Use the intensity of pain or discomfort to enlighten the way.
Santangelo River of Grass Congregation, Florida. Calm attitude of love, smiling, breathing, growing, deepening, nurturing relationships.
Let us hold these affirmations, these hopes and dreams, in silence for a moment. Hear these words of Erica Hewlett. Hear these words of Erica Hewlett. I invite you to take the hand of a person next to you.
The hand in yours belongs to a person whose heart is sometimes tender,
whose skin is sometimes thin, whose eyes sometimes fill with tears.
Whose laughter is a beautiful sound.
The hand that you hold belongs to a person who is seeking wholeness and knows that you are doing the same.
As you leave this place, may your hearts remain open.
May your voices stay strong.
And may your hands and hearts remain open and stretched outward to the magical healing of community.
Blessed be. Namaste. So we have invited you into a process where we are thinking about the strategy of how we can use the stories of our lives, place it in a sacred context, and then learning and growing from that process. Angus MacLean, who is an intellectual redwood in the world of religious education, once said that our method is our message, meaning that the way that we act, the way that we practice our relationships says a lot about who we are as a people of faith. It says everything about who we are as people of faith. So what we'd like to do now is to invite you into a conversation about the process, what it did for you, what are the possibilities, what are you wondering about? What did you notice about your own learning, your own engagement with that process that you just went through? Please come to the center microphone and share.
Annalee Stevens from Port Townsend, Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship.
Hi.
Hi. I'll just say what touched me the most powerfully, and that was when we held hands. And I was imagining the issue that I had, and I didn't have to look at the person, so that was kind of nice. But I had to feel them. And then when you offered us the opportunity to say, this hand belongs to another person, I added in the idea that, and then you, of course, included that, but a person who feels, has some of the same issues you do, feels pain, feels confusion, etc. So what that says to me is that I'm a kinesthetic person, and that works for me. Some of the other things I've sort of faded out, but that was powerful.
Thank you very much. One of the things that we often don't think about is the role of the physicality in our learning and our healing around these things. So thank you for that reminder. Hi.
Hi, my name is Rhonda Wingfield. I am from Richmond, Virginia. The first thing I noticed and became aware of was a little bit of nervousness about, will I get this right? Is it possible? And then realizing a need to just open up to be vulnerable and commit to the experience. So after that, and answering the question, the process moved to a place of feeling relief that I had shared, and that was a wonderful thing to be able to do, and then forgive myself. And then after that, it moved to the great joy of hearing and holding hands with somebody else. So that was my process. Thank you for it.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jen Altman. I'm from North UU in Lewis Center, which is Columbus suburb, so come see us next year. And I'm a part-time DRE, so I'm wondering about adapting for children, if you've ever done something like this with younger ones, if you could speak to that. Thanks.
Absolutely. I think this would be appropriate as an activity for children, for youth or adults, and also for multi-generational audience, because it allows everyone has a story to tell. Everyone has a place. They have a response in that way, and it's very open. Yes, I think it does work very well for children. Anything?
Steve Nutt from Staten Island, New York. I was initially annoyed with you.
That means I did it right.
I said to myself, intentionally vague, oh, but I'm an academic of sorts too. And then the person next to me saved me and brought me in.
Thank you for staying with the process.
Jamie McReynolds, Charlottesville, Virginia. And I too was touched by the holding the hand of someone else. And a quote from Philo of Alexandria came to mind, which is, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle.
Thanks.
I'm Beverly McCormick from Valley Unitarian Universalist Congregation. And I wasn't here for the process. However, I've been very much a part of Beloved Conversations, Meditations on Race and Ethnicity. And so intuitively, I felt as if I had been here. And what came up for me as being a facilitator in the trainings four different times was that I felt an incredible opening. I've been in my congregation for 18 years, and it was only after being part of this conversation was I willing to become more visible and more vulnerable and more available to the people who were there. I was able to speak my truth in a kind of way that was freeing for me and was a revelation for them. And in many instances, what started out as something that could have been anxiety-provoking became a really great cocktail party story about how we got past it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's one of the things, thinking about ways that liturgy is the work of the people, so ways to incorporate this not only, as our DRE asked, for children, multi-generational, but ways to work it into the liturgy of Sunday morning. Joys and sorrows, not in all of our congregations, but in some of ours, and there's been tension over the years about it. I wondered out loud with a group of 40 ministers a few months back, whether it was the long rebellion, our hunger for joys and sorrows, our long rebellion against the sometimes over-intellectualism of our services, that we are seeking a place for our heart as well as our head. Our intellectualism will always be incredibly important, but how can we make space for this other side? So, thank you.
Elena Garofoli, First Parish in Brookline, Mass. And I love the physical manifestation of connection. I mean, it brought it home, the humanness. And I can easily see being able to bring the practice of connection to, I'm on the board, or my parish committee, so I could easily, and we're also trying to encourage all of our committees to recognize that doing the work is indeed spiritual work, and so to foster that notion, this to me seems like a logical place where we could start to incorporate this practice so that people really get it. And then my question is, beyond trying to incorporate some of this work into committee work, how do we, can we begin to incorporate it as part of regular worship? I'm a little, that is escaping me in the moment, but thank you.
Thank you for that. I think part of what we are trying to do with this kind of practice is to invite people to wonder, to go into your committees, your teams, your gatherings, and as you're organizing them, to ask the question, how can we get out of our heads? How can we do things that open it up? part of it is building a skill. I think Beverly was talking about Beloved Conversations, which is an 8-week program that holds people together and helps them to practice the vulnerability of telling honest stories about race and ethnicity, how it shaped their lives as individuals, but also how it shapes the life of the institution. And so creating those kind of practices that are repeated again and again opens up that kind of naturalness. Thank you.
Martha Dallas, DRE at the First UU Society in Burlington, Vermont. I think the music, the holding hands, the Teze chant, there were a few ingredients and then some mystery that, and even some confusion on my part about, am I doing this right? What am I supposed to be doing? This workshop was the first time at GA when I drifted away from what you guys were doing and went into a place that where I needed to be of creativity and imagination and ideas for when I get back. And it caught me by surprise, as it usually does. I'm trusting this is a familiar experience, that suddenly something opens up and we get creative, and it happened here. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Marilyn Campbell from the Lake Norman Fellowship in Davidson, North Carolina. And the way I put myself to sleep at night is I say a mantra, may I be filled with loving kindness, which a lot of us know. And you made me realize I could say that to myself, couldn't I, the next time that I've got a problem?
It sure wasn't a ham sandwich. And let's face it, I mean, the whole notion of seriously looking at liturgy is something that doesn't take place in most UU congregations. And so this, for me, was very, very refreshing and welcoming. And I tried to break it down afterwards. I went into my head, which I always do. I'm on a worship and music committee. Got to do that.
Fine.
What I came up with was a movement from centering to framing, then the eliciting of a personal story, a reframing on change, and then the work at the personal level, then the testifying, and then finally the joining. So that the emotional movement, I thought, was absolutely exquisite. And at a personal level, I was able to release to it. And I thank you for that.
Thank you. Send that to me. just a quick background that might also help you all think about this. So one of the hallmarks of Meadville Lombard Theological School is the deep collaborative work that Lee Barker mentioned in his introduction between faculty members. And this was born out of a problem, a question, I should say, a wondering that Mark had about how to do a worship service with a group of students on a trip to Tulsa. And so he wandered down the hall, someone who's there, and said, hey, will you help me with this? And so we were in the galley kitchen of our offices, and we spent some time, it was over an hour, working through ideas, talking, playing with it. And later when we were talking about General Assembly, I asked Mark if he would do something with me. I said, you know, there was something about that process and trying to share, which is a hard thing to do, a development of a process to help us think. And Mark is a professor of religious education. I'm a professor of history. But also he's a longtime Unitarian Universalist lay leader, and I'm a longtime parish minister. And so also thinking about that collaboration and bringing it to a different place. So,
yeah, I think the Barnaby Feeder, I'm the minister at Middlebury, Vermont. And I guess I have more of a question than a comment, and it plays off the gentleman's remark about how he was saved by the person in the group. And I'm wondering if you've done some thinking about how much to say up front, reassuring people that it will come together and that the people around them will help it come together, or does that take away too much of the mystery? It seems to me either way. If I think if I was trying it with the congregation, mindful that there's going to be visitors, hopefully, every Sunday, I would want to give some words of reassurance that if you feel like you're not getting it, this is going to help, and the people around you are the ones who are going to help you do it.
Yeah, I thank you. Thank you for that. One of the things that I am still learning as an instructor, as a person that does a lot of transformative work and teaching, is to trust the people, right? To trust that it's going to be okay. Often, yes, there are times when you might say something or you might play a song or something along that line that triggers someone, and wow, what. I don't really want to take responsibility for that, and that just feels yucky in some ways. But also to trust that someone will probably extend a hand, that someone will be there, and to actually work on creating a culture where that's okay. So part of it, I think, is learning to trust that the human instinct will come forward, and that people will take care of each other. That it doesn't always need to be me that takes care of folks, that people in the room will do that. So part of it is that, and I think that's also a great suggestion, to give people a way to say, we invite you, if you would like to do this, to maybe give some warning. We noticed that I said, you're going to share a story, but share a story that you feel comfortable sharing with someone else, right, as opposed to something that might be problematic for them in terms of confidentiality of their lives or something like that. Thank you.
Pat Caffrey, Second Unitarian Church of Omaha. I have to say that I was most inspired by the number of people that willingly and authentically came up here to the mic and gave witness, and that all of those things could be published as daily meditations. It was just very powerful to me. But I don't think that would have been possible if we wouldn't have had the opportunity to share a personal story with another person right before that. So it was nice. That process that you're talking about worked. I too was very annoyed at the very beginning, but then I think I realized that I needed to be agitated, like when you stir up your imagination, to get out of the way. Right. And so I have to say that surprisingly, I think I've experienced just a little bit of transformation, which is quite powerful. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. And our last comment. Yes. The pressure.
You'll be fine, Claudia.
Pretend there's three more after me, okay? I'm Claudia Cohn from the Unitarian Church in Summit. And rather than speaking about my process, I want to thank you. I guess it reflects on my process. So I've also been a facilitator for Beloved Conversations a couple of times and doing dialogue circles on race in our town, and challenged myself to go to every overcoming racism session I could find at GA, and have been feeling a little burdened and inadequate, like there's so much work to do. And it reminds me that and I've seen that in the people in my groups that I've facilitated. So I want to thank you, and also encourage us and those of you who are ministers to help keep us spiritually grounded and healed or in the process of healing as we go through the hard work of reflecting and noticing and challenging ourselves, to have that comfort of, you know, it's okay, you're not alone, and this is what it feels like, and there's a healing in it. So thank you.
Thank you all very much for taking the risk to engage yourself, to bump up against those places that you may not want to bump into, and for going forward. This is our work. This is our work. Our hope is that this will, as you've been saying, inspire you to play a little bit with your people. Nicole, anything from you?
Go play.